afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, May 17th, 2022. Howdy, Dave.
Hello, Melody. And happy National Pack Rat Day.
Oh, no. Are you still on that kick? Pack
cherry,
Rat?
Cherry Cobbler Day, too, and National yummy. Walnut Day. So your choice of what to celebrate today.
I'll take the cherry cobbler.
There you go.
I think gold needed a little bit of a sugar rush today. We didn't seem to get one. It tried. It tried. We had a high of 1835, but it wimped out 1817. Great buying opportunities, ladies and gentlemen. Silver was down 2 cents at 21.68. Platinum was up 8,960. Palladium was up 26 at 2,124. And I hear these people out there saying, oh, gold's going to go to 1,500 and this is going to happen and this and going. I can remember these same guys when gold was 1,300 and, oh, gold is going to go to 900 or 700 or 800. You know, it just cracks me up. They never fail. They use the same pitch line day in and day out, year after year, decade after decade. Except most everybody, you know, they don't listen to these programs and other people for 30 years like I have. So you don't hear them, you know, what they were saying back in the 90s and in the 2010s, the first decade of the year 2000. I mean, it's just the same old BS. They're pitching whatever they need to sell. And if it means, to get you to buy something else by telling you that gold is going to go to 1,500 or 1,400 or whatever price they pick and silver is going to go, you know, things go up and down. You focus on the trend. The trend for gold and silver is higher. And gold and silver is probably the only investment out there that even if it stays the same and doesn't go up to the levels that we predict, you're still better off than holding paper. You'll still be the wealthiest person on your neighborhood block. Because everybody else owns paper, and their purchasing power will decline. At least you get to hang on to something that's real and to protect you from all the garbage that's going on around the world. So, you know, if you're looking to buy, you buy. It's that simple. And USDX today was down 0.88 at 103.33. Crude oil was down another $2 at 11.12. Paper markets were happy today. Even after old Jerome Powell came out and said, hey, he's not going to hesitate to keep raising rates until this inflation comes down. Well, why would anybody believe him? He's the one that said, oh, this inflation is just transitory. But nobody remembers that. Transitory, Mr. Powell. So you're going to keep raising rates until inflation comes down. And it's going to hurt some people, but you know what? We're just going to do it until we get this inflation under control. Yeah, okay, sure you are. You know, he's lying the same way he's lying about the transitory inflation. The Dow was up 431 points at 32,654. The S&P was up 80 at 4,088. The NASDAQ was up 321 points, 2.75%. 11,984. All of the world was happy last night. The Asian markets were stronger. European markets were stronger. I guess they like it, you know, with us getting a little bit closer and closer to a nuclear war. I guess it just makes everybody really happy. Oh, geez. It's kind of makes me want to. Well, today is an interesting day. You had pressure on both Brent. Again, is at 111, the same price as WTI, but natural gas continues to rise 8.30, up 4.33% today. Bonds, 10-year yields higher, still below 3, 2.98. And so I don't know, Dave. I mean, this whole thing is just, It's amusing to some degree. You know, when you don't have anything, when you know you're protected and you know you're safe, and you watch all of the manipulations and the ups and downs and the crookery and everything else that goes on, it's really kind of amusing. Unfortunately, it's going to hurt so many people, and that is not amusing. But until we get to that point, and Dave, you know, here, gasoline, I know diesel's over six. We're going to talk about other places where it's very high, and yet I haven't seen anybody really slow down. Traffic seemed to be just as heavy. Restaurants here seems to be just as busy. I really haven't seen anybody cutting back to any degree, and I can remember in the last time, well, the crude was priced at $150, and we had these prices. Towns were like ghost towns at night. People did stay home, and I don't see that happening this time. Maybe it's been because we were so cooped up for COVID that people are going to go out and there isn't going to be anything that keeps them in their house. And consumer spending, retail sales, that's just another example. Monthly sales rose 0.9 overall. But how much of that is inflation? They're not adjusted for, they're not adjusted for inflation, so we're told. Supposedly they're indicative of sustained spending. Economist Jeffrey Roach at LPL Financial says retail sales in April shows that the consumer is weathering the inflationary headwinds. So how high does inflation have to go until they feel that inflationary headwind, Dave?
Oh, who knows? Who knows? But these numbers surprise me somewhat. As I'll talk about in the third segment today, consumer sentiment has been falling. And when sentiment falls, consumers usually cut back their spending and increase their savings. So, you know, just further perpetuating uncertainty and mixed signals in this crazy, wacky economy. Go ahead.
We did have Easter in there. Easter sales was in April.
Well, yeah, that could have driven driven that. And sales excluding vehicles were revised. They were March auto sales were revised to a gain of 2.1% from 1.1% originally. So it just, again, suggests, you know, just like particularly our GDP numbers, which are revised 3 months, three separate times after the quarter ends. You know, it's not sure how reliable this, particularly this first swipe at the April numbers are. But online sales were up 2.1%. Bars and restaurants showed 2%. Now, there's actually a 2.7% decrease at gas stations. Because energy prices, believe it or not, declined a little bit during the month. Now, excluding gas stations, sales increased over a percent.
Yeah, well, I think May will be a totally different month. That's for sure. So you're going to see all these numbers crash, I believe, because we might have seen a few pennies drop at the gas stations. But I'll tell you what, it certainly has outpaced those few pennies this month. And so I would think that these numbers will crater next month for this month. The only saving grace that I think May has is Memorial Day. Last month there was Easter. This month you have Memorial Day. So I can't imagine what June might be. And I don't think him raising interest rates another, you know, 50 basis points. When's he do it again? May? I mean, June?
June.
Yeah. It's not going to have any impact. It's not going to have any strong impact. and the higher he goes, it's going to have more of a negative impact. So,
yeah,
I think just a lot of people were cooped up and they went out. Gasoline prices really weren't that high yet. You know, gasoline wasn't over $4 yet. And you certainly didn't have diesel over $6. And so I, you know, like we do this month. So, and it's an election year. You're going to have lots of fuzzy math figuring this out. So, hey, what can I say? There was a separate report today from the Federal Reserve, industrial production that rose. I mean, you know, 1.1% in April. People weren't, economists were not expecting that. That is the fourth consecutive month of increase. And of course, there was this jump in auto production. And as well as higher utilities and mining output, despite continued supply chain snags. Industrial production, it includes factory, mining, utility output, accelerated from a 0.9%. So it was driven by a 0.8 advance in the key manufacturing sector. Output of motor vehicles and parts increased for a second straight month. By 3.9% in a sign that the supply chain bottlenecks that have hampered the sector for months continue to ease. But you know, when I went out and I was just looking at some furniture this weekend, it's still almost a year. So I don't know how they can actually say that the bottleneck, that the supply chain bottlenecks, there isn't anything really flowing yet. So, I mean, a year is a long time. 8 months to a year is a long time.
Day. Sure is. Well, these supply chain disruptions, dysfunctions, snags, snafus, whatever you want to call them, have been holding back production, not just here, but around the world. Most observers believe that that'll continue in the coming months, particularly with these recent closures in
China.
Shanghai and other parts of China, not to mention the Ukraine war. Now, the question is, will further tightening slow U.S. consumer demand? We will see, right?
But
yes. We do need a couple of more months, I believe. Particularly another 50 base point increase in June to see how that's going to affect retail sales the rest of the summer and particularly economic growth in the second quarter.
Well, we're beginning to see the builder sentiment in market for single family homes. That fell sharply in May. Something fell as mortgage rates have gone higher, even though we've seen some building costs show no relief. Sentiment fell by a large 8 points to 69 in May. And this was all according to the National Association of Home Builders Housing Market Index. And you still have readings above 50 is usually considered positive, but this is the fifth straight month that this sentiment has declined. In fact, May's reading is the lowest since June of 2020. And builders had a brief, quick negative reaction to the beginning of the pandemic before rapidly bouncing back. current sales conditions, of the index's three components, current sales conditions fell 8 points to 78. It was still relatively high. But you got to remember, if this sentiment is dropping, that means home building is dropping. And that means sales of refrigerators and all that stuff falls too.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. And again, we saw 30-year fixed mortgages hit first 5.25%, now 5.41, and then 5.64, according to the Mortgage News Daily. The rate started this year at 42% lower at just 3.29%. But at the same time, builders saw inflation hit their costs hard. Even though lumber had a brief respite in price increases, still historically high. And that's certainly hurting things as well as other building materials. Their chief economist, the home builders, Bob Dietz, said building material costs are up 19% from a year ago. And in less than 3 months, mortgage rates have surged to a 12-year high. Now, he said that, and based on other current conditions, less than half of new and existing home sales are affordable for a typical family, Melody.
Wow, that's a. We're going to skip on down to Erdogan, Turkey's president. Can you hear me, Dave?
I can hear you well.
Okay, great. I wasn't sure. He has doubled down on his opposition to Sweden and Finland joining the NATO alliance. And, you know, and I know you don't agree with his. People really do need to read Pat Buchanan's article about these two Nordic countries that are wanting to join NATO alliance. And why does the U.S., what is our role anymore? You know, these are European countries or Baltic states, and, you know, they should start take, you know, it's just like your little children. They get to a certain age and they need to go out on, you know, when they're 50, they should, or 40 and 50, they should, you know, pretty much be on their own. But Erdogan warned, he says, we'll not say yes to countries who apply sanctions to Turkey to join security organization NATO. And he was referring to Sweden's suspension of weapons sales to Turkey in 2019 over the military activities in Syria. Sweden's foreign ministry yesterday announced that it planned to send senior officials joining with officials from Finland to the Turkish capital of Ankara to address Erdogan's objections. But the Turkish leader said, nah, don't bother. you're going to be wasting your time. He also added that the two countries joining NATO would make it a place where representatives of terrorist organizations are concentrated. Finland's foreign ministry responded by saying that it implements the UN as well as the EU terrorism sanctions against any person or entity in accordance with EU legislation. Okay, that's fine. Then let the EU protect you with this and the UN. It doesn't have to be the United States, Dave.
Well, this
oops.
We'll have to talk about that more later.
Yes, we will. We're heading into a break. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Did you want to finish any of that topic with, we were talking about going into the break about the Sweden, Finland wanting to join NATO and why it really is such a bad idea and we should, you know, and so forth. Did you want to add anything to that, Dave?
Well, just really where Erdogan apparently is coming from in terms of referencing terrorist sympathies, you know, by Finland and Sweden in the past. And I mean, just that the two countries have provided refuge to members of Kurdish militant separatist organization, the PKK. Which Turkey has classified as a terrorist organization and which has carried out attacks in Turkey in the past. Now, Sweden and Finland have also provided support for and held high-level meetings with members of the YPG, which we've talked about in the past. That's the PKK's branch in Syria. That's credited with helping to defeat ISIS as well as fighting against Turkish forces. So that's really it. It's a big question. I mean, certainly in terms of the two countries, on the one hand, of abandoning long-held positions of neutrality vis-a-vis NATO and Russia. And on the other hand, Russia's fairly explicit warnings about what membership could mean for those two countries. So we will see. I'm skeptical. I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of pressure for member nations to approve their admission. Of course, not even mentioning the prospect of Ukraine at some point.
Well, if they want a nuclear war, there you go. And I don't understand why they're pushing for it, because they want it. And Putin has no other, instead of trying to negotiate and so forth, I mean, it just makes absolutely no sense at all. So, yeah, no, it's not a bad deal. It's none of our business. And why would we want to go to war with Russia for Sweden and Finland? Let the EU protect them. Germany has built up their military. If they didn't, they should have. They didn't put all that much money towards NATO over these years. They should have plenty of money to do that. But none of these socialist nations have a lot of money because that's where all their money goes. So the U.S. gets to pay for everything. And we shouldn't have to go to war for those countries. There's no interests, national interests, and it's just but anyway, it's horse of a different color. But California state average for a gallon of gas that surged over $6. The average price in California, $6.02 a gallon today. This is, I'm assuming, regular gas. I don't know what their diesel, does it say what their diesel is?
Yeah, a little bit lower, I believe, and I'm sure it's outdated. I mean, it'd be 557. Now that's the national average.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's you know, another buck, 650 plus in California.
The national average hit a 452. And, yeah, when I got gasoline yesterday, diesel was over 6. It was like, I think, 599. So, and we're an out of a, can't imagine what it would, you know, can't imagine how they're handling it, but Dave.
Well, interestingly, you got AAA spokesperson Andy Gross, who's saying even the annual seasonal demand dip for gas during that lull between spring break and Memorial Day, which would normally help to lower prices, is having no effect this year. Now, of course, you know, oil per se isn't the only factor that influences gas pump prices. I mean, the lack of refining capacity is also pushing up the cost. And, you know, demand for oil-related products is surging as economic activity is coming back. But refining capacity is lower than pre-pandemic levels, which they say is contributing to the rapid price rise, Melody.
Well, it kind of makes you wonder. I mean, it's just like we don't do anything on our own. I mean, we know our medications are made in China and everything else. But and one of the largest refiners in this country is owned by the Saudis. So, you know, it always kind of makes you wonder, you know, when you have these types of woes, you know, when we see the capacity, you know, the refining capacity is lower, is what is really behind it. And because you have all these nations that control everything that we need and do. And, you know, so you just don't know. And that's, to me, that's a lot of control over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
European Union, they slashed their forecast for economic growth. That Europe's GDP says they're going to expand 2.7% this year and 2.3% in 2023. I'd like to know how they're going to do that. And I just always love these predictions when they come from these government groups. The European Commission previous outlook expected growth of 4% this year and 2.8% in 2023. So I guess they dropped it in half. So I guess they did drop it, right? That's how I'm reading that.
Yes, correct.
So, yeah, so they are taking a big dip, and I'm surprised it'll be 2.7, but we'll see. They did have a good year last year, 5.4%, but they actually admit they had a deep recession prompted by the pandemic. Did theirs last more than a month, I wonder?
Oh, 5 weeks.
Oh. Okay. So, you know, that deep recession, you know, it just cracks me up. But so they're yep. also grappling with this weaker growth and, of course, this surging inflation, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, the inflation, of course, brought on primarily by these energy prices. EU-wide inflation is now projected to be 6.8% this year. And 3.2% next, although I believe lower, I believe they'll both be higher in either case, but they are well above their previous projections of 3.9% and 1.9% respectively. So for what it's worth, which in many cases ain't worth a whole lot, I think I'd prefer to tune in to consumers' expectations.
Yes, I think so.
Tend to be more accurate, interestingly.
Hmm. This always amazes me when especially when things are becoming so much more expensive and everything, how many small businesses they continue to struggle to hire qualified workers. Hiring and retaining employees remain the top challenge for small businesses. This was a survey that was done with 1,100 businesses just last week. And 90% of these businesses that are hiring are finding it difficult to recruit qualified candidates for their open positions. You know, supposedly, from all we hear, this job market is supposed to be sizzling hot. An unexpectedly strong recovery from the turndown, the economic turndown in 2020, it left these companies scrambling to recall workers that they had laid off or to find new ones. Over the past year, employers have added an average of more than 540,000 jobs a month. Let's see. Small business owners believe the job market is a tale of two recoveries. 88% of respondents in a survey say small businesses are struggling relative to larger companies. 52% say they have lost employees to larger businesses that are paying more, Dave.
Well, data from ADP show a widening gap in hiring between businesses with 500 or more employees and businesses with less than 50 staffers. Those smaller businesses have lost jobs in three of the past 4 months. Not so on the other end of the continuum. In March, employers advertised a record 11.5 million job openings. And as we've mentioned, the U.S. now has virtually two openings for every out-of-work person. But a larger number of smaller businesses say they're having trouble getting candidates to even apply for openings, particularly in the hard-hit leisure and hospitality industry. Owners are taking on more work themselves. They're complaining about burnout, working 80 to 90 hours every week, and could create some health issues too, particularly for folks who are getting up there in age who just aren't cut out for that kind of long hours and stress. And of course, there's also inflation. So, good time to, or let's put it this way, it's a challenging time if you're a small business owner.
It really is. And it's been challenging for a long time. You see so many of these smaller businesses can't beat the big box stores and so forth. And, you know, they've been pushed right out of business. And yet that so much of that was a heartbeat of America. So, but, you know, hey, these big corporates, these big multinational corporates and large companies, well, you know, they can continue to borrow. And, these large companies continue just to add on to their debt. These high-grade companies borrowed nearly as much so far this year as they did over the same period last year. And last year was a record. And even though borrowing money in the high-grade bond market now costs about 2 percentage points more than it did last year, big companies with good balance sheets, they can absorb those costs fairly easily. As a result, high-grade companies haven't really slowed down when it comes to refinancing or to M&As. And, we saw that when Discovery bought Warner Media and borrowed $30 billion in the bond market, Dave.
It's a little different for high-yield companies. Those with heavy debt loads and lower credit ratings. Borrowing activity for these companies has basically fallen off the proverbial cliff. These companies had a much higher cost of capital to begin with and now have less capacity to absorb extra cost, in this case, interest payments. The average high-yield bond is now about 7.5%, compared to just 4.5% at the beginning of the year. Most high-yield companies refinanced their debts last year when money was cheaper, so refi needs right now are fairly low compared or comparatively. So what happens if the Fed doesn't stop at the expected 2 or so percentage points in rate hikes this year? Well, experts say the borrowing slowdown could spread to high-grade companies. Because eventually it's got to start hurting them as well. Now, deceleration in M&As and other debt-fueled projects would likely follow, as higher borrowing costs mean some projects make less economic sense. I don't know, Melody. What does that mean less dividend payments, less stock buybacks. Poor multinationals.
Yeah, well, that remains to be seen. You know, they'll get bailouts. You know, if they get in trouble, they'll get a bailout. So, you know, it's, you know, we talk about inflation in this country and how it hurts so many people. And it's getting a little more, you know, people are surviving though. They're so far, some aren't, some are. But we don't think about some of these other countries. When you have bread, I mean, that is just bread is a staple of everyone's diet around the world, no matter, you know, especially for the less fortunate. And we continue to see these wheat prices surging to near record high levels. India said that it would ban exports as it deals with an extended heat wave. I believe there were some other countries that decided not to export wheat because they wanted to keep it to feed their own, because they were worried. I can't remember which countries that they were, but there was, I think, a couple of them that we talked about maybe a month ago when these prices first started to rise. So, you know, you got the war, you got extreme weather, you have inflation, you've got countries putting these export controls in place, and that truly is really hurting, you know, it only makes the issue worse. At least 43 such protectionist measures have been implemented since these wheat prices have started to rise. I mean, anywhere from, these include restrictions put in place by Russia, Belarus, Indonesia, ban on palm oil exports. You have China's prohibition on fertilizer exports. I mean, it's going to hurt all the global supplies, and it's going to make these prices on food to go even higher, Dave. And it's been a long time since we've seen any type of these. I think it's been longer than 15 years in the industry, but...
Well, it's been a while, and there are few commodities more important than wheat.
Yeah.
You got rising prices for bread have led to social unrest throughout history. Think France, Russian Revolution, the Arab Spring. Over the weekend, bread prices sparked protests in Iran, and more headwinds are certainly coming. There are issues with drought in France that could drive up prices further. And production in the U.S. is already down. I mean, the U.S. isn't a big exporter of wheat anyway because it's too costly to ship overseas, but it is a supplier of last resort.
Huh. We'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients this final segment. You can call her at 1-800-375-4188. Our latest American Survival newsletter has once again hit the streets. I have an article about consumer sentiment and whether it's falling portends a coming recession. Now, a year before the pandemic hit the U.S., consumer sentiment was on the rise, eventually hitting the 101 mark in February 2020 before abruptly falling to 89 and then 71.8 over the next 2 months. Well, the latest consumer sentiment index declined by 9.4% to 59.1, down from 65.2 in April, reversing the gains that were seen last month. 59.1 reading represents a 59% fall from its pre-pandemic peak and is the lowest reading actually since August 2011. And for those of you who don't know, I mean, the University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index, we'll call it the CSI, is a monthly survey of at least 500 households nationwide that gauges consumer expectations about the economy. More specifically, the CSI is a leading indicator that seeks to find how consumers view their own financial situations, the short-term economy, and the long-term economy. Along with the Conference Board's Consumer Confidence Index, the CSI is intended to show whether consumers' attitude towards spending is getting better or worse over time. The CSI and other economic indices can help investors and economists better predict where the overall economy is headed. For example, consumers who feel more confident about the economy generally also feel better about their employment prospects and are therefore more willing to buy especially the big ticket items, houses, cars, appliances, but also other items. Conversely, when consumer confidence is low or falling, they tend to buy less, contributing to slower economic growth. And the dollar's value also tends to fluctuate with the rise and fall of the CSI. So traders and speculators can or often do take positions to profit from sudden moves that may occur when the index is posted every month. Technically speaking, the CSI is generally calculated by subtracting the percentage of unfavorable household replies from the percentage of favorable ones, net adding 100. The index is normalized to have a value of 100 in the first quarter of 1966. Now, the May index declines were broad-based for current economic conditions as well as consumer expectations. Plus, they were visible across income, age, education, geography, and political affiliation. And it continues a downward trend generally in sentiment over the past year when it was about 29% higher at roughly 83. Consumers' judgment of their current financial situation relative to a year ago is at its lowest reading since 2013, with over a third of consumers attributing their negative assessment to, yes, inflation. The index of current economic conditions was down 8.4% at 63.6 and down 29% from a year earlier. The index of consumer expectations was down even more, almost 10% from April, 56.3, also down 29% roughly from a year earlier. Now, the median expected year-ahead inflation rate was 5.4%. That's virtually unchanged over the last 3 months, surprisingly, and up from 4.6 a year ago. The average, however, was considerably higher, the average as opposed to the median, at 7.4%. That reflected substantial variation in price changes across various types of goods and services and in household spending patterns. At the same time, long-term inflation expectations remain fairly static, with a median of just 3%. And that's within this 2.9 to 3.1% range that we've seen over the last 10 months, again, of long-term expectations. Now, shortages and inflation are creating widespread hardships in the country and certainly midterm headaches for Democrats who control the White House and both chambers of Congress. And the question is, does falling sentiment foretell a recession? I mean, who knows, right? Other than perhaps Jay Powell and his Fed colleagues, perhaps. But interestingly, consumers' subjective assessments in the past have shown a close relationship to actual developments in the national economy, namely GDP growth. In fact, since 1960, household appraisals indicate a high degree of correlation with actual changes in real GDP. 0.9, that's high. Various other academic studies have looked at this relationship and confirmed that high correlation as well. One of them from 2007 concluded that consumer spending increases when consumers are optimistic about their financial future. That same study also showed that personal savings increase when consumers become pessimistic in this respect. Then you have several studies dating back to 1995 that show that consumer sentiment is influenced by a number of macro developments, like economic growth, employment and jobless levels, stock market exchange rates, oil prices, and interest rates, with media coverage about these developments also a major influencers. Now, you know what the CYA types say, past isn't prologue. That is, past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Yet, more and more economists are starting to warn that the Fed's 2022 tightening policy is likely to put the country into 2023 recession, if not before then. But I believe we're still a few summer months away from having the crystal ball come into stronger focus. I mean, when it does, however, an eventual downturn will be longer than the one that passed by in 2020 with the blink of an eye, and will be better and better for gold and silver. So hold on, ladies and gentlemen. As we've been discussing here on Financial Survival, meme stocks and cryptocurrencies have been have tapped into Americans' inclination towards speculation, but good old-fashioned betting is having a moment now, too. Americans have wagered a whopping $125 billion on legal sports bets since a 2018 Supreme Court decision paved the way for legal gambling in all 50 states. 30 states plus Washington, D.C. now have live legal sports betting markets. Five more have legalized it but are not yet operational. They are New Mexico, Washington State, North Dakota, Wisconsin, and North Carolina. But look, here are some of the numbers for the others. Topping the list is New Jersey with $26.2 billion in bets placed since 2018 and $1.8 billion in taxes generated for the state since that time. Nevada follows with $23.6 billion. And $1.3 billion in taxes, then Pennsylvania with $13.7 billion bet and $1 billion in taxes collected, Illinois with $11.4 billion. and $808 million in taxes. And then Indiana was $7.8 billion and $700 million in taxes. Rest of the top 10, New York, Colorado, Michigan, Virginia, and Tennessee, an average of $5.3 billion bet and $408 million collected in taxes thus far. I mean, even the next 15 states are producing a lot of betting activity and revenues for government coffers. They include Iowa, Arizona, Mississippi, West Virginia, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Louisiana, Oregon, Delaware, D.C., Arkansas, Maryland, Montana, Wyoming, and South Dakota. Now, the average amount bet since 2018 in those states has been $1 billion, with average tax revenues generated of $79 million. Not too chintzy indeed. Now, finally today, Pam and Russ Martins write in today's Wall Street on Parade that tongues are wagging about Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway having bought over 55 million shares of Citigroup stock for its portfolio, which came to a tidy sum of $2.9 billion. They say the tongue wagging stems from Citigroup stock having lost 40% of its value over the past year, with no sign that the bleeding will stop anytime soon. Well, except today for today's 6% jump. Citigroup closed at $53.40 a share on March 31st, closed down yesterday at 47.46. Translation, it means that Buffer's wager on Citigroup is already down 11% for a loss of $327.6 million so far. Knowing Citigroup's history, things are likely to go from bad to worse from here. As the Martins reported last Friday, Citigroup stock price is down 84% since the Great Recession. Buffett taking such a big stake in Citigroup is even stranger given that Berkshire Hathaway had dumped an $8 billion stake in J.P. Morgan Chase in 2020. It's not unprecedented, though. I mean, Buffett's previously come to the rescue of other battered Wall Street firms, including going back to 1987, the $700 million stake in Salomon Brothers preferred stock. And Berkshire took a $5 billion preferred share stake in Goldman Sachs, with an eye-popping dividend of 10% at the time. Well, crazy, crazy, crazy. Now, to put the best face on his Goldman rescue, Buffett released this statement at the time. Goldman Sachs is an exceptional institution. It has unrivaled global franchise, a proven and deep management team, and the intellectual and financial capital to continue its track record of outperformance. In reality, what was really going on at this, quote, exceptional institution, the Martins say, was that it was allowing hedge funds like Paulson and Company to handpick subprime debt that was likely to fail, so it could short the instruments, while Goldman Sachs knowingly sold the debt to its other customers as a gosh darn good investment. Well, Buffett is likely aware of the lengths to which the Treasury and Federal Reserve went to hide Citigroup's insolvency in 2008. Plus the reasons they did so and the likelihood that there would be another bailout of Citigroup and other too-big-to-fail banks on Wall Street in another, a future financial crisis. In 2008, Citigroup held enormous amounts of foreign deposits that weren't covered by federal deposit insurance. If the U.S. had allowed those deposits to just go up in smoke, it would have significantly damaged confidence abroad in holding funds in the U.S. banks. Now, starting in December 2007 and lasting throughout at least June 2010, Citigroup received these bailouts from, yes, U.S. taxpayers. $2.5 trillion in secret at the time, cumulative loans from the Fed and $45 billion in capital injections from the Treasury. The federal government also guaranteed over $300 billion of Citigroup assets. The FDIC guaranteed almost $6 billion of its senior unsecured debt and $26 billion of its commercial paper and interbank deposits. But instead of Congress learning lessons from Citigroup's implosion back then in 2008, the obscene bailouts that followed, Citigroup has been allowed to continue on its merry way with trillions of dollars in new derivatives and off-balance sheet exposure. So instead of shoring up confidence, the Martins now warn that Buffett is actually making a bet on the ability of rogue financial institutions like Citigroup to continue to game the system, which continues to largely look the other way. Stand up, write your congressperson and senator about this, ladies and gentlemen, and stay tuned to Financial Survival. We'll keep you in the know. Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday, which Paul will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet.